Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
Oh, oh, what? Sam Kerr, gone and done.
Russo's in there. That will do it for Manchester United.
Beckmead steadied herself and scored a stunning goal.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic Women's Football Podcast. Coming up, Jonas in line for a bonus as Arsenal rout Chelsea. The French crisis rises and International Women's Day allies as Anton Tolui flies in. Hi, it's Lindsay Hooper here with Leeds United legend and broadcasting superstar Lucy Ward, who I heard on my TV coverage this weekend. Hello, Lucy.
Hi, Lindsay.
And also rounding off our lineup today, we've got the Athletic Charlotte Harper. Hello, Charlotte.
Hello, Lindsay.
With International Women's Day coming up on Wednesday, we'll be talking to Sky Sports' Anton Tolui about the importance of allyship and why the responsibility can't just be on women to solve the issues facing women in sport in 2023.
I remember in editorial meetings kind of suggesting, oh, maybe we should look into this story, maybe we should look into this. And one senior member of the newsroom called me Pankhurst for the first 6 months of the job because I was daring to suggest things that weren't really on their conscience.
First, though, on this show, we have to begin with the first trophy of the season, the Continental Cup Final.
All over Arsenal after going behind, fire back to end their four-year trophy drought.
And before we get into the key talking points from Arsenal's comprehensive 3-1 victory over Chelsea, congratulations to Alison Knight and Ed Folds for winning our ticket giveaway for the final. We hope you enjoyed that game. If you were listening last week and you entered, it was in fact Alison and Ed who got to go and enjoy that occasion. I think we should try and get some photos of them in the stands. They must have taken some. But the game itself, Arsenal bounced back from conceding 2 minutes into the final. Sam Kerr with that goal. They went on to beat Chelsea 3-1 and win their first trophy in 4 years since the 2018-19 league title. Let's get into some of the analysis around this then and how the Gunners were able to wrestle back control in this match from Emma Hayes' side. Because I imagine, Lucy, watching this, when you see Sam Kerr has scored so early on, you think that's it, Chelsea are going to go on and win this.
Yeah, and I think perhaps that's what Chelsea thought. I actually missed the goal as I entered the living room thinking, it's 1-0. And then all I watched from then was Chelsea struggle with the intensity that Arsenal had, particularly down Arsenal's left. They just caused so many problems. And I think that from an Arsenal point of view, the fact that Emma Hayes had to keep changing her tactics, I think she changed from back three to back four. She kept changing who was playing on the right-hand side of defence. I think that tells you everything about the dominance that Arsenal had. They just had such intensity winning the ball high up the pitch. Chelsea couldn't get out. And I think by the time you recover from that intensity when you're Chelsea, they couldn't get a foothold in the game. And that goal just before half-time.
And it's right on the goalkeeper. And it's 3-1 in stoppage time. Raffaele!
Oh, what a sucker punch that is for Chelsea.
It was a real problem because that just meant that they just had a mountain to climb. But I know that Emma Hayes likes to, she's got enough players to, so she likes to make changes within games or she surprises us with her tactics all the time. Whenever I'm doing a commentary of Chelsea and you see the team sheet, you have absolutely no idea how they are lining up in terms of a formation, which is a good thing in a way, but it also isn't if the players cannot quite react. And I think you can complicate the game a little bit too much sometimes. And when it's such a big game and the players have to adapt, I just think that they just lost whatever hold they had on the game.
So do you think then it was a case of them not knowing the role that they were meant to fulfil?
No, I don't think it was that. I think that Arsenal's intensity sort of hit them for six after Chelsea scored. I think then they scored a couple and then Emma Hayes had to react, so she changed the formation. Then the players have to get used to it, but the killer is that goal just before half-time. I don't think it's that they didn't know the roles, but by the time they were trying to get a grip on the game had already gone.
Charlotte, Emma said after the game in her post-match interview that she didn't feel any of her players were at their best. She also said and hinted towards the word complacency, I guess when you read into some of the other quotes from the press conference. What was your take on why Chelsea didn't perform as well in this final, given the start that they made?
What's really interesting is that both teams set up pretty much the same as last Sunday's FA Cup fifth round, where Chelsea beat Arsenal 2-0. The only change that Arsenal made was Maritz in for Wijn Reuter at right back. And Arsenal had learned from their mistakes. They recognised the patterns. They had more clarity. And apart from that Chelsea early goal, Arsenal then stepped up. And so you can't stand still in football. You know, it worked last week for Chelsea, but Arsenal outfoxed them. They were first to first balls, first to the follow-ups on second balls, won the 50-50 challenges. And yeah, Emma Hayes said that there were poor performances across the pitch. Jelena Kankovic really struggled in Arsenal's press, wasn't clear on her role. But that's also down to Arsenal's movement. They had identified, as Jonas Eidevall said, where the free player was. And Kankovic had to either break out of Chelsea's organisation or stay put. And she ended up being caught in the middle, especially in the build-up to the first goal. So when asked, Emma Hayes said, you know, she couldn't put her finger on it. But it's a combination of Arsenal's intent and learning from their errors, but also Chelsea's lack of fire and complacency as well. And I think it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation. You know, Arsenal were that better side and Chelsea just weren't at the races either.
Emma also said, Lucy, that she felt that Arsenal wanted it more. And when you look at those duels, those individual matchups within the game, it was the Gunners that were coming out on top in nearly all of those. It was surprising in particular to see Chelsea's defence, which I thought just weren't at it compared to previous performances. Did you see any of the battles that were won by Chelsea players in those individual matchups?
Not really. I think it was difficult for Chelsea players just with the way that Arsenal played. They sort of just put four up against them at the back and they had no pass out and they weren't rotating enough in the midfield to allow that pass out. And I think they were actually shocked. But it was interesting afterwards with Emma Hayes. I mean, I understand it really stings for her to lose a final, but she sort of, I think her quote was, against a team that hasn't won a lot. Now, You have to have pretty recent history to talk about Arsenal not winning a lot, because Arsenal have won everything that there is to win, including a Champions League or UEFA Cup. So I think Arsenal fans will be quite happy that was the way that Emma Hayes reacted, because it obviously, you know, it stung a little bit, didn't it? But I think she wasn't happy that her team basically didn't play at the intensity that Arsenal played at. And you have to match the opposition. You have to win that little battle of intensity and hard work, and they got off to a bad start and it didn't get any better in terms of obviously after they scored. As soon as Arsenal turned up the volume in terms of their intensity, then Chelsea just went from bad to worse.
Perhaps we shouldn't read too much into the winner of this when it comes to the title in WSL, because last season Chelsea lost to Man City 3-1 in the League Cup final, so they've lost it before and gone on to win the domestic league. But what do you think this can do for Arsenal season, Lucy? You talk about how many trophies they've won. It had been 4 years, so it is great for them to get something in that trophy cabinet. But I imagine more from a confidence point of view, when they're missing some of the key players they have been missing in recent games, does it show that they can find a way?
Yeah, I think that they'll look at it and think that was a psychological hurdle, because they lost the key players, because everybody's talking about them losing the key players, because they didn't play particularly well last week and that they're lagging behind really in the WSL. I think it was quite important for those Arsenal players that they overcome that psychological hurdle and then some, really. And I think that is why you know, they were so, I mean, you know, they won a trophy, so you're going to be really pleased. But I just think the celebration showed that they knew that they were going to play different as it than they did last week. And if they did, that they'd win it. And that, I think that was key. And their better players played really well. I think, in fact, I don't even think there was a player who didn't play well for Arsenal.
Who was your player of the match, Charlotte?
It's a tough one between Leah Valti and Kim Little. They were superb in midfield. Jonas Heidevel said, you know, it was a near perfect performance from Kim Little. And the way they just orchestrated Arsenal's defence and attack was a pleasure to watch.
Arsenal hadn't beaten Chelsea in five attempts prior to this game. And as you say, we'd had that precursor in the league where Chelsea had beaten them the week before. Where do you see this going, Lucy, when it comes to the title now? Do you think Arsenal are going to be right in it? Or do we still stick with what we've been saying in this podcast for the last couple of weeks, which is we think Chelsea might do it again?
Yeah, I think over the course of the season that the squad that Emma Hayes has and the players that she can change the way that she plays with off the bench or in different games, I think you have to say that they're probably the favourites. But they'll get pushed right to the end. I think it'll give Arsenal a shot in the arm in terms of the rest of the games this season. But I don't think you can look past Emma Hayes. If they do what they're supposed to do, then they'll win the league.
It's shaping up nicely, though. We can't rule out Man United, of course, at top of the table. Arsenal sit fourth. They're 6 points behind second place Man City with two games in hand. It does look like those four are just going to be vying for the European places. We've got this game as well in midweek, Chelsea playing Brighton. I think Emma Hayes hinted about the turnaround in fixtures, Charlotte, ahead of the final. Clearly a lot going on for Chelsea. They've got this midweek fixture too. Do you think there's going to be lots of rotation for this one?
I think there will be, because she'll have to, I don't want to say punish, but she'll have to say, you know, you either step up and prove to me that you've got that hunger and desire and you want to dig deep and start those players who disappointed against Arsenal, or you rotate completely and say, you know, you're benched, you just didn't give enough on Sunday, and that's why I'm not starting you today.
Whilst Arsenal and Chelsea were slugging it out at Selhurst Park, we did have a round of WSL fixtures taking place as well. Man City stretched their unbeaten run to 12 games with a 3-1 win over Spurs. An 85th minute goal from Rachel Rowe ended Reading's run of four straight defeats against West Ham. That's something that she's done before, isn't it? Rachel Rowe scoring late on. And Aston Villa's solid season continued as well as they beat Everton 2-0 at Walton Hall Park. But the eye-catching result of all of them, without doubt, was Manchester United's 5-1 demolition of Leicester City. So let's take some key talking points from this one. You look down in immediately when I was watching the highlights for this one, Alessia Russo stands out because she got a hat-trick in this, Lucy, and it felt like it was coming. She's had a few weeks where she's been knocking at the door.
Yeah, I mean, I watched quite a lot of this game, actually, because it was on before the Conti Cup final, and I think Manchester United were comfortable all the way through the game. And then obviously the scoreline suggests that. But even at the start where, Leicester sort of came back into it, I just think that Manchester United were just able to just step up another gear, and Leicester really at no real point were in the game. And I think that was more about the quality of individual players and obviously the way they play as a collective. But Russo has a really valuable habit of being in the right place at the right time when the ball will maybe bounce a little bit in the area or drop somewhere. She is usually there or thereabouts.
And do you think that's the difference, that she kept on doing that, kept on making those runs? She hadn't scored since mid-January. We have seen her popping up in the right places. It just all fell into place on this game.
She has her teammates to thank as well, because I think that they work really well. I do like Martha Thomas. I know that she's a nine, but obviously Russo, but Russo can play wide as well. They are quietly, obviously, doing very well. And everybody sort of said, oh, but Chelsea have got games in hand and Chelsea will do this. But Manchester United looked really comfortable and really confident. But, I look at Russo and she's just getting better and better.
United have scored 33 league goals this season against an XG of 19. So they are way surpassing what the chances are suggesting per game, Charlotte. But they're surpassing expectations full stop. I think people could see the progress that Mark Skinner was making at the end of last season. He obviously brought in some of the personnel that he wanted there. But to be there at the top of the table at this point of the season, but also winning in such a great manner. I mean, the way that they've been just dismantling sides recently has shown that they're not taking their foot off the gas and they don't look like they're going to have a slip up. What do you think it would do for United if they were to win the league this early on into being a club?
It'd be huge, massive. But we're still in March, Lindsay. So let's not get too carried away. I'm always quite cautious. And, you know, Man United, they did it last year. They just faded away towards the latter stages of the season. And don't take anything away from Manchester United's performance. But, you know, they've got big games, Chelsea, Arsenal, Manchester City to come. And if they keep winning against mid to bottom teams, then that's fine. But those are going to be the crucial matches when can they take points off the top four? And I think we saw it just before Christmas when they beat Arsenal and showed that belief that they can overcome that mentality and psychological battle. But can they hold their nerve? That's going to be the big question.
We have got one of those fixtures that you mentioned coming up this weekend. Lucy, you can't ignore the fact they've scored the most goals, they're conceding the fewest. And if that continues, it would point to the fact that they would be WSL winners. Are you feeling that they're comfortable for that? Or do you think that there is something to be said for Chelsea having been there and done it?
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for Chelsea having been there and done it. I think that at the moment, like Charlotte says, it's March. So, you know, when we look through the fixtures, they've got, obviously, Manchester United have got Chelsea next. And then, but the crucial one, and I'm just looking at them now, is they obviously they have Arsenal again, but they've got Manchester City at home, second last game of the season. Now, that'll be key because Manchester City are just, you know, quietly going about the business, getting themselves on track, scoring a lot of goals and doing all right. And by that stage, you know, will City be on a run? And they will be difficult opponents. We know that from history. So there's some key games in there that, you know, it's really exciting. I wouldn't want to put any money on either of them, to be honest.
Lucy, seeing as you watched this one, I think more so than Charlotte and I, who just caught the highlights. Leicester, they got 32% of their shots on target this season, which is the second worst record in the league. I don't really want to look and cast a net too wide over Leicester because, of course, since Willie Kirk's come in, they've had two wins of the last three prior to this match. But where do you see them and their relegation battle this season? Because Reading got an important win.
Yeah, it's interesting because they looked like they were definitely going down a few games ago and I think they were really struggling. They had to sort of make a change. Willie Kirk's got the experience, hasn't he? But it's really tight down there now. Brighton, you know, that they, you know, that they're not being consistent. Spurs are not particularly consistent. So, and like you say, Reading have got a good win at the weekend. So I think that Leicester will be looking, thinking, we're not that far away. If we could just keep picking up. Now, obviously, Manchester United away, they're probably looking and think, we're going to get some. What they've got to make sure is that they might not think that they were going to win there, but it shouldn't dent the confidence. If you're losing and you're at the bottom, you've got to make sure those losses to teams that probably you'd expect to lose against, you just got to make sure that the confidence doesn't suffer, and they target particular games, particularly at home, where they can get points, because I still think they'll look at it, Leicester, and think that they can get out of it.
And the setup for this one, did Willie do anything particularly ill-advised for this match, or was it just a case of Manchester United were always going to be too good?
Yeah, I think individually, I think Willie will probably say that some of his players didn't perform as they should have done. And if you are playing against Manchester United away, then every single one of your players has to be an 8 out of 10 if you're going to get any sort of result. And if any of them, you know, fall below that, then you're going to struggle. And I think that's what happened. Manchester United pressed high. They couldn't pass out. They had no real outlet. Leicester at times, they got the goal, which is a really good goal. But I think that was just, you know, just something that it was an opportunity taken, and Manchester United, like I say, moved from second gear up through third and fourth after that, and obviously the scoreline reflects it.
Well, to be in March and for it to be open at both ends of the table, we don't know who's going to go down and we don't know who's going to win the title and get those European places. As you say, Manchester City, I think keep an eye on them as well, but they're in there, Arsenal, Chelsea, and leading the way at the moment, Manchester United.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
It would be remiss of us to only focus on the weekend's results and not talk about one of the biggest stories in women's football right now, the crisis in the French team. We've spoken to Charlotte Harper about this before, and I know you've wrote extensively, Charlotte, about this. In the last week since we spoke, the French Football Federation president, Noël Legret, has resigned. Three players, including Wendy Renard, who also made that FIFA best list for the seventh year in a row, which was a record, have made themselves unavailable for selection. Manager Karine Diacre's under huge pressure. I know there were meetings there being had. What can you tell us about the latest on this, Charlotte?
So, let's break it down.
Deep breath.
First of all, Legret, the president, resigns. That's after a report ruled that he had failed to hold the necessary legitimacy to manage and represent French football and highlighted the inappropriate behaviour of Monsieur Legret towards women. So he denies any wrongdoing. But after the sports minister released that report, he resigned last Tuesday. That means that Corinne Diacre is under significant pressure, the France women's head coach, because it was Legret who hired Diacre in 2017, has been a long-term supporter of her. He was the one who gave her the contract extension after the Euros for another 2 years. He didn't consult anyone about that. That was his decision. So now that Wendy Renard, record speaks for itself, 8 times Champions League winner, 10 days ago came out and said, "I'm not playing the World Cup in such conditions. I've got to step back in order to preserve my mental health." Then Marie-Antoinette Katoto and Kadiatou Diani supported their captain and said, "Yep, we stand in support of you." Diani actually did an interview on Sunday, so yesterday, saying that there's a lack of professionalism in the French team. They have too small a staff and really called for Diacre to stand aside. So there is a meeting on Thursday, which will decide Diacre's future. It's my understanding that it's probably likely that she will be gone, but we won't have that decision until the meeting takes place. The people who are deciding her future is the interim president, but also a small working group of Jean-Michel Aulas, who's the president of Lyon, as well as the treasurer of the federation, Lara Georges, who's the secretary, former players as well. So we know that Aulas and Diacre have not had a smooth relationship in the past, considering that several Lyon players, such as Eugenie Le Sommer and Armandine Henry, were dropped by Diacre as well. So it's all a bit of a mess for France with less than 4 months to the World Cup. And Diacre going or staying will prove crucial to their preparations. So we will have to wait and see on Thursday for the final decision of the federation.
Let me double down on the Diani interview that you mentioned. This was with TF1 over the weekend, because I think we heard a lot of players last week who came out to speak about the problems within the France national team. And it was to do with the support and the structure and effectively things that we've heard before in this country, Lucy, which is wanting more resources, feeling like the women's game isn't being treated equally. She went on in this interview to say, "We don't have an assistant coach. We don't have a specific striker coach." And she said you had to be, in quotes, really injured to get the same care you would normally receive at your club. It does feel like this classic case of trying to fight and bang the drum just to get equal rights in the game. And I'm sure this is something you have heard before, but do you think there will be a possible solution in time before Australia and New Zealand?
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, in 2023, we're still in a position where support's not always shown at the highest levels. I mean, you've seen what the investment into the England team has done recently. Nowadays, because the players don't rely on income from national teams that they got in the past because they've got more money from clubs, they're in a position now where they don't have to accept all that rubbish, you know, particularly when they look at what the clubs are doing for them. I think Diacre, she doesn't have any empathy. I think that's pretty clear. I think that she makes sure for some reason that she has an unhappy culture within the dressing room, and it's pretty damning on her really, and that players like Renard will, you know, protect her mental health. That's how bad it is. You know, how that she is that, you know, the captain of the team, and she's prepared to miss the World Cup, right? To actually speak out. And I just think Diak has been so well protected. You know, Charlotte sort of said that earlier. I think it needs a clean sweep, new start. And I just think that sort of toxic management where she pits players against each other and making herself be sort of the leader is very difficult to work under in this day and age. And I think the solution is to get the opposite kind of coach, a coach that, you know, can harness the talented players that the French have. But it's just really sad that how much the players are risking with the World Cup not far away. And, you know, that just shows how horrendous it must be.
Lindsay, if I can just add, you know, the resources, the question of the resources, yes, there are only three members on the women's team's technical staff. So Diakra and the goalkeeping coach and fitness coach who double up as assistants. So that's what Diani was alluding to. But of the people that have spoken to The Athletic, it was also really about the football. And we haven't really heard from this from other federations, as you know, training sessions lacking intensity, a lack of tactical emphasis, video sessions don't always occur. And when they do, it's minimal. Players don't have time to practice set pieces after training because the bus is waiting. They spend too much time warming up without the ball, so too much running. There's no clear plan. Players' roles are ambiguous. There's too much rotation. So of all the kind of people that I've spoken to, this is a real footballing sense. And as Lucy alluded to, Runa and Yanni and Katoto, they're at PSG and Lyon, who are playing regularly in the Champions League, and they expect the best. And France are not giving them that at the moment.
Let's be hypothetical for a second, Charlotte, because you're going to have to write about this again. Canal Plus reported over the weekend that Diakra will not resign, but there is a French FA executive meeting scheduled for Thursday to discuss her future, which you mentioned. And if that position is untenable, as you alluded to, that you think it might not be, without the president in place in this organisation, do you back the French FA? Do you think they'll make the right appointment to replace her? And who do you think would be a potential candidate?
So Diakra's future has been delegated to a working group, as I referred to earlier. So that's with Lyon president Jean-Michel Aulas, who's in charge of a new women's football department at the federation. There's the Strasbourg president Marc Keller, and then former footballers Aline Riera and Laura Georges, who also are treasury and secretary, respectively. And, you know, Laura Georges played centre-back alongside Renard. So they are the people who will look at the situation, present the report to interim president Philippe Diallo, and decide Diakra's future on March the 9th. Various media outlets in France have linked the PSG manager Gérard Prêcheur with the job. There's other candidates from other French clubs who may be interested. But one question is, do you look outside of France? For example, look at Serena Wiegmann, a Dutch manager coming into an English culture.
Don't let them look at her.
I wouldn't dare. Hands off Serena Wiegmann.
Yes.
But you have to think, if you really want to shake up from the French Football Federation, would you go abroad? My hunch is that's probably unlikely. They would recruit from within the French footballing circle. I think that with those people in charge, that they would come to the right decision. But who knows? it's anyone's guess.
Well, Lucy, you can have the final word on this, because France's World Cup campaign kicks off in 139 days as we record this against Jamaica. So I think we should forget about talk about winning their first ever World Cup right now and just say, do we even think that they're going to make the knockouts given this current state?
Well, I think that they are so used to operating in chaos, which is what it has been for quite a while. And they got used to that, which is pretty sad. And they've had relative success with all that going on off the pitch, that I just think if they have all their talented players available and wanting to be there, then I can still see them going far in the competition, because particularly if they've got a new manager, because when you've got that many good players, and then you have a manager who actually facilitates it being a, you know, a cohesive unit with all the best players there who are on form, which I think another thing that hasn't really happened over the years. I think there's been personality clashes why certain players have not been picked. If you have all the best players and in a cohesive unit, then, you know, they may surprise people.
We'd love to hear your thoughts as well as you're listening to this on the chaos that has been unfolding in France. Of course, we know it's not just in France. There are other nations like Canada having their own fights at the moment as well. Why don't you tweet us with your thoughts about any of those stories or anything you'd like us to include in future episodes as well. Use the hashtag AthleticWFP. And we're at The Athletic FC.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
As we said earlier, International Women's Day is coming up this Wednesday. To celebrate, Anton Tolui is joining us, a fellow broadcaster from Sky Sports and reporter who you will all know and love, but a huge supporter of the women's game as well. Anton, first of all, big hello from us.
Lovely to speak to you all.
We wanted to start with the allyship tag. I wonder how you feel about that and what it means to you.
I think the word ally is really interesting, isn't it? Because you think about the traditional definition and it's people kind of standing alongside each other in terms of a cause or a fight or a battle or something like that. But there's always a mutual benefit. And now I kind of feel like the word ally a lot of the time, and especially corporately, I'd say, has been turned into something that is just quite self-congratulatory for being what just a semi-decent human being or having a sort of shred of common decency. So I think the word ally is kind of, in its truest form, is a brilliant thing. But I think a lot of the time it's that it's doing more than what the right words are. It's doing more than actually sort of, you know, just saying the right things. It's actually sort of action and trying to realise the fact that change benefits everybody. And I think that's why it's really important. The word allyship, the true meaning of the word allyship never really gets lost.
I'm interested to know as well from your standpoint in the women's game, because you've been in it for a while now, whether you've seen attitudes changing in that time and if you think that it's different now to when you first started covering the women's game.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, massively. It's made huge strides in terms of taking over people's sort of sporting conscience and a consciousness and actually sort of, you know, people actually wanting to spend time and wanting to sort of find out about the stories and the personalities. That's completely changed. I remember when I started back at Sky Sports 10 years ago now, I remember being at editorial meetings kind of suggesting, oh, maybe we should look into this story, maybe we should look into this. And one senior member of the newsroom called me Pankhurst for the first 6 months of the job because I was daring to suggest things that weren't really on their conscience. And it's completely changed now. The attitudes are now actually, if you've got a story, regardless of gender, it's right. What's the we want to cover it. What resources do you need? And that makes you feel better individually because obviously it means you can actually have an impact in the stories you cover, and more people within the sporting spectrum are actually sort of represented in the media, but also it just means that the game gets the coverage it deserves.
I agree with Anton when he says about that it's just basically about being a normal, what I would consider to be a normal, empathetic human being. Do you find that you feel like sometimes that you have to fight some battles, or you feel the responsibility if a female who's working at Sky is getting a little bit of stick online? Do you feel like that you fight battles or you know, is that a hide into nothing? And I know what social media is like.
Look, I'm in a really fortunate position. I am I'm a white man, right? So in terms of, I don't have to fight battles on an everyday level like lots of people do professionally and just in their personal lives as well, and to the same extent. So one thing I try to do is just be a sympathetic ear. So if somebody is struggling with online abuse, or somebody feels as though their voice isn't being heard, or their credibility is being questioned, or even if it's just something that, you know, a lot of people sometimes, I think, working with, you know, females, sort of reporters and producers and journalists, I think, that work in the women's game. I'm sure, Lindsay, you'll tell me better than anyone else. But sometimes, you know, you feel as though some people that have been in the men's game a long time don't listen in the same way. It's just that kind of like, well, I'll at least try to back people up. I'll try to listen effectively and try to show that not everybody's like that. And if it needs to go further, then it'll go further. Again, it's not a massive crusade. It's just trying to do the right thing, isn't it, Lucy? That's yeah. All you can really ask from people.
Absolutely.
I think as well, it's the subconscious now. I don't think really, if people are decent human beings, as you're both saying, no one would overtly express an opinion or an attitude that would make women feel uncomfortable in those spaces anymore, not if they're decent. But what we're trying to do now is get to the ingrained, it's subconscious behavior within society. So for instance, Anton, when you say about my experiences, you know, going back, I remember being sat down as a lead presenter on a show with a producer, and we used to swap who would lead between, they call it presenter one and presenter two. And I would have a male co-host. And I remember being in a meeting and I was the lead presenter for that day. And the producer was talking to my male colleague and he just moved the script over to me so that the producer had the conversation with me because I was leading. It's just those little subconscious things that I don't think people even intend to do it. And I think if you're in tune, which I know that you are, Anton, you probably pick up on those things more than the average guy, let's say.
It's just being aware that everybody's being treated equally. And I think it's interesting because a lot of the time when you're talking about the word ally, it's about the collective. Right. So it's about looking out for, OK, fine. So we need to do more to get more women in media, to make sure that, you know, there's the various sorts of, you know, things that are dominated by effectively white men, and it improves. But also then you lose the individual. I think about, I've been really lucky in my career when people have looked out for me and taken me to the side and helped me develop as a human being and helped me develop as a professional. Well, if everybody's looking out for the collective, who's looking out for the individual? Who's looking out for somebody if they're having a bad day? Who's looking out for somebody if they're, you know, so it's that kind of, again, it's just being a sensitive ear, I suppose, to anybody that's, you know, that might be struggling in a way that isn't always obvious.
What do you say to your mates, Anton? Like, a lot of mine have been like, oh, women's football this summer, prefer it to men's football, is brilliant. But to those people who just say, nah, not for me, what do you say to them?
First off, I'll get the whole you're just going for the holiday thing to Australia in the summer, but I think I'd get that anyway, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, look, I get it. You still get that, oh, but, you know, is it really, is the game really the same? Is it, you know, is it still, and it's just, I mean, the thing that frustrates me is just go and watch the Conti Cup final. That's, I'll just point this to a game. Just go and watch a game. Just go and watch a proper good game of football. And if you didn't find that game entertaining yesterday, you don't like football. Is that simple? You can't call yourself a proper football fan if you don't. If you're a season ticket holder at any club and you don't know what your women's team's up to, you're not a proper football fan. Is that simple? It's not. And it's just kind of flipping it around to them and just saying, you know, look, well, if you can't tell me seven players in the England team, what does that say about you? I quite enjoy it. I quite enjoy that conversation. It's quite a politely confrontational way of flipping the conversation and making it someone else's problem.
I'm so intrigued as well, because I know that Lucy, Charlotte and I, when we say we work in football, one of the first things you get in a taxi and that, so do you really like football then? You can just count down. You can do the clock to it being asked, actually. I mean, if you had a penny, we'd all be millionaires. And I imagine, as someone who is a staunch supporter, advocate for the women's game, as a man, you must get a similar response. So what is the common reaction?
I think it's twofold. One, I think there's people are like, oh yeah, but you know, did you get into it because, you know, you knew it'd be good for your career? And it's like, well, no, because it wasn't good for my career for a long time. Nobody listened, and like we were saying earlier. But secondly, I just like football. I just like covering football. So why would I not want to go and cover any game or any transfer or any sort of, you know, competition? Because that's fun. Just because it's changed doesn't mean you should be happy with the pace of change, should you?
And you're a journalist in the game. What is it that you campaign for? What would you like to change that still exists at the moment that frustrates you?
Oh, two things stand out straight away. One is the kind of the medical side. If a player goes down and ruptures their ACL in the Premier League, they're off. They're in a, you know, they're privately looked after and they're being, you know, they're getting done and operated on straight away as soon as they can. In the women's games, you never know how long a player's going to wait for their surgery. You never know how long it's going to take. It depends which club you play for in terms of the actual medical care you get. That just seems utterly, utterly ridiculous to me. And then you extend it further in terms of the medical side and the science side. When it comes to sort of, you know, understanding why, you know, female players are more susceptible to a certain type of injuries, understanding how the menstrual cycle affects. If that was a man, we'd have had, you know, so much money, millions would have been invested, and not just by clubs, not by the league, but by FIFA and FIFA, everybody would be trying to investigate how we can crack down on this. It's ridiculous we're at this position now where we're only at the starting point of research and funding. That, for me, is just baffling. And secondly, the one that, as a fan, that annoys me is some people are trying to keep this narrative that women's football is nice. It's not nice. It's brutal. It's vicious. It's competitive. It's nasty in a fun, entertaining way. If a player gets narky and tells another player to F off, or if a player goes in with 2 feet, I want to see the clips of that online. I want to see it all. I want to see it treated in exactly the same way. And that includes the good, the bad and the ugly.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And the four of us, we all play our own roles. There'll be many more listening as well, but we have to be critical. And this show is one of the ones where we want to do analysis that's also highlighting what's going wrong in the game as well as what's going well, because that metaphorical tap on the back only gets you so far, I think. And yeah, we all have to do that. I know, Charlotte, you're doing that with your pen. You're writing about all the tough issues, and I've heard Lucy doing it on commentary. Anton, you and I, we've got to keep asking those tough questions as well. Thank you very much for your time.
Lovely to speak to you. Take care.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is the Athletic Women's Football Podcast with Lindsay Hooper.
Financial Times Business of Football Summit took place last Thursday. Charlotte, you were there for The Athletic. What were your takeaways from this?
Well, we've just spoken about International Women's Day, and it got me thinking, actually, Lindsay, because you had different panel sessions with some very influential members in football, whether it's lawyers to private equity investors, former chairman of clubs, Amanda Staveley from Newcastle United, Javier Tebas, the president of La Liga, the director of the Premier League as well. And the first kind of question was, how can investors make money out of football? And then it went on to, how do you run a football club to ensure long-term growth? And I just stuck my hand up at the end because I thought, you know, your women's team is part of your football club, and nobody has mentioned their women's team as part of financial sustainability and profitability and ensuring long-term growth. So as we were just chatting about International Women's Day, it made me think that, you know, those people in really powerful positions need to start thinking about women's football as their club and not just a separate entity from their men's team. But aside from that, there was a specific panel on what's next for commercialization of women's football. I asked Barbara Slater, the BBC director, about the TV rights for the Women's World Cup, because that's still yet to be decided. She said she couldn't comment on live negotiations. The Athletic soon reported that the BBC and ITV are close to finalising a deal to share the broadcasting rights in the UK for this summer's FIFA Women's World Cup. So go and read that by Flo Lloyd-Hughes. I think it's just in the final stages of a deal. And the next little newsy snippet, which was really interesting, was that the Arsenal's CCO, Juliet Slott, so the chief commercial officer, we were talking about how men's football is saturated in terms of scheduling. And she believed that it would be good for the women's game to be played in the 3 p.m. blackout. So it would be lifted for women's football. She said it would help increase interest in the women's game, which is a really interesting point and one that I hadn't thought of before.
I want to know Lucy's thoughts on that.
Do you know what? It's interesting because I've been banging on for years and obviously working on the women's game since 2005, started on the WSL at the start of the WSL, and there's never really any real consistency of when the games are on. And I think that sort of reached ahead in the last couple of years. Right at the start, I think everybody was grateful that ESPN or whoever it was, BT eventually, that covered the women's game, that actually put games on. But then it got to a stage where it just needed a slot that was specifically women's football, and I think that the new TV deal has allowed that to a certain extent, but still you need the eyes on it, and I think that it's a good idea. I think that revenue is really important. I think the women's game needs to start washing its own face. It needs to start producing the money. It needs to, you know, get people in, get advertisers in, and I think having that 3 p.m. slot on a Saturday is perfect, because everybody then knows that if you want to watch it, if you want to go to whatever, you know when it's going to be.
The only thing is that they've also talked about it, I know, on the men's side, about lifting this blackout as well. So if that happened for the men's side of the game too, it probably wouldn't have the desired effect, would it, Charlotte?
No, it just defeat the point. So I know lots of discussions. We know that the new company is being set up for the WSL and Women's Championship, and Karen Carney at the Financial Times Summit said, you know, treat women's football like a startup business. We have a blank canvas. So, yeah, we need to be bold and brave with the ideas that we're putting on the table.
Is there anything else that you really want, Lucy? I'm giving you this platform because I can hear from you talking about when the WSL was formed. I imagine there's a few things that irk you that you'd like changed.
Yeah, it's funny because you sort of see a lot of change. And I remember playing and thinking, oh, it's really taking off now. And then it never happened. It was really taking off. It just seemed to be really, really slow. And I think one thing that I always sort of said, which I think has happened since the Euros, is that I want to see these girls that are at the top of their game and playing in the top league and playing for England or, you know, other international countries, that they need to be recognisable. They need to be promoting certain brands so that people know who they are. Because Manchester City did it really well at the start. When Manchester City women started winning, they put their pictures on the side of the Etihad. And I think as soon as it becomes normalised like that, and I think it's happened, but that used to be a real bugbear of mine. It's like, these are athletes at the top of the game, and the only real respect that they get is from people who are obviously into women's football or other athletes at the top of the game, because they know what it takes to do that. So after 2015, it's like, right, get these girls advertising different things, get their names out there. And I think that that's happening now, but it just seems to have taken so long. But that was just one thing that I just used to think, well, why can we not do this when these are top level elite athletes and they should be known, their faces should be out there.
Well, I think that's all we've got time for today. Before we leave, I'm going to leave you with that point, Lucy, which was very well made. But let's bring it back to football, because there is a huge game between Chelsea and Man United. And already Charlotte was saying, look, Manchester United's title credentials are going to be tested when they play the top teams. They do so this weekend. How do you both see this one playing out? And Charlotte, seeing as you made that point, we'll go with you first.
It's going to be tight. Oh, do you want a score prediction, or are you going to put me on the spot, Lindsay?
You can give whatever sort of prediction you want. If you want to sit on the fence, sit on the fence.
Chelsea really need to come out with a reaction following the defeat to Arsenal. And I think they will be up for it and pumped against Manchester United. If United can get the service to Alessio Russo, then they may have Chelsea rocking slightly and feeling quite vulnerable.
I don't know where I'm left after that, Lucy.
Well, looking at the game, obviously earlier in the season when Chelsea played Manchester United away, it was 3-1. And then since then, Manchester United have got really good results. And I don't actually think they've lost in the league since then. And I think that's key in terms of them reacting straight away and beating Arsenal next time in the league. That's what they did. And then they have maintained that form. So I think I agree with Charlotte that it will be really tight and perhaps a draw. But I think that Chelsea may have a little bit of advantage when they play at home. I think that it's a really strong advantage. But I think it's going to be a draw.
King's Meadow. I'm either going 2-1 Chelsea or 2-2. One of those. I'm going to leave it there. That's all we have time for on this week's Athletic Women's Football Podcast. Thank you to Lucy, Charlotte and Anton as well for joining us earlier. And a thank you as well to our guest producer, Doogie, who's come on board for this week's show. And thank you as well for listening. Keep in touch on socials. I'm sure there's lots of things we've spoken about that you want to get involved with on today's show. Use the hashtag AthleticWFP. You can tag us in as well at The Athletic FC and at Offside Rule Pod. We'll be back next week.
The Athletic.